Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio. Special Operations Military News, and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Hey, what's going on? This is Rad, the host of Soft Rep Radio, and I have a super awesome, stoked episode today. But before I introduce my next guest, I gotta tell you, I appreciate you checking out the merch store. We've been shipping stuff out to you. We love you picking up the branded Soft Rep Radio goods. Like I say, it keeps the gas place going so we can keep this show going for you. So I can bring awesome guests and authors about who I'm going to talk to in just a second, but I want to mention our book club. So softrep.com/book-club. We have that book club. Brandon Webb and the guys and gals have put all the time and effort into putting a book club together for you. Go check it out. Read a book. Read a banned book. Just read a book. Read a book. Okay.
Amen, brother.
Yeah, amen. And who that is, who is on the video, who you hear in the background is none other than Eric Blem. Eric Blem, welcome to the show, Soft Rep Radio.
So stoked to be here.
So stoked. Now, I'm going to give you a quote from somebody real quick about you, and it's, Eric Blem offers an insightful perspective on how Craig Kelly became the effortless icon that we all revered, as well as sobering details of how his heroic journey tragically ended. The Darkest White is a must read, not just for fans of snowboarding, but for anyone looking for inspiration from an unlikely hero. Tony Hawk, professional skateboarder, wrote that quote about the book that we're here to talk about, which is The Darkest White. And to precursor that, like Star Wars, okay, how they go backwards.
Oh yeah.
You also have a book called Fearless that's been out and that really took off. Top 10 biopic, you know, you wrote about Adam Brown and the heroics that happened and he ultimately succumbed to the injuries. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep. It was a redemption story. He was killed in combat, putting himself in the line of fire to keep his brother safe and accomplish a mission. And it's a story that has resonated with so many walks of life because it is a redemption story. It's kind of like the Prodigal Son meets SEAL Team 6 meets Trainspotting. Because it was an addiction problem. Yeah.
You know, and I'm not trying to confuse my viewer or my listener that there's multiple things going on here in this intro. Okay, first of all, we got Eric Blem on the line. All right, and he was the editor of Trans World Snowboarding editor-in-chief, right?
Yep. Once upon a time in the 90s, represent.
Once upon a time. That was my Bible, okay?
Oh, and, my gosh.
I had a skate shop when I was 13 years old in Layton, Utah, and I carried Trans World skate and snow, and I got the dealer issues, and I would always love to flip to the very, 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 very back and go, Utah, Layton, Skateboard Village, boom. I'm in this thing, like the phone book. I have a purpose.
Are you talking about Trans World Snowboarding business, the business pubs too, the trade ones as well?
Yes.
So what year was the shop? I just have to interview you for that. What year?
See, I went to SIA when I was 17 in Vegas. So that was like, I'm 46 now. So 90, I had my shop when I was 13 till I was about 18. And it was from like 91 till about 94, 95. So about 4 years, maybe 14.
I was finishing college in 93, and during that final year of SDSU journalism school, I was hired as the managing editor of Snowboarding Business. So I put together that little rag of a magazine that you used to love, and I am so stoked to hear somebody out there actually read it.
I did. I love it. I just want you to know that when Guy, my editing director, or my editor-in-chief of software, is like, Rad, get Eric on the show. I love his book, Fearless. I'm like, yeah, that's great. I get the SEAL community, but you have in common as a snowboarder and as an extreme athlete, just like a SEAL or any of these Rangers or any of these guys that go through infantry or anybody who joins the military and puts themselves as a healthy person. They are able-bodied. They are chasing, the 2 mile qualification. They're doing the push-ups. You know, I see that in snowboarding. I see that in these athletes like Craig Kelly, like Mark McMorris, like these guys out there. They're training, they're standing on one leg, they're doing squats, they're doing all these different types of burpees and flutter kicks. And, it's all about the core and, it just crosses over. I've got friends in the Spec Ops community, Eric, and I know my listener wants to listen to you and I'm fanboying over you, bro. But Brandon Webb, who runs this, former Navy SEAL sniper, he's going to Chaminade.
I know Brandon and read his, his early book, and we met via his words, via the written words is how we met.
I love that. He's getting ready to go to Chaminade. And before COVID hit, he went and did Big Mountain Heroes, where he took veterans from wherever they were at, and he took them up to Chaminade on Soft Rep's dime, which is no easy task. And they had Nick Cahill, who's been on National Geographic as a videographer, video of the whole thing, won awards, Big Mountain Heroes. I just want to put it out there so that my listener hears that. And bro, I got a snowboard right behind me on the wall. You got snowboards right behind you.
I'm surrounded there in the front of me. It's like I'm squeezed in by the memories and the nostalgia of my life, because snowboarding gave me a path. And it makes me feel good to have them around me, just like books.
I love that. And so you went to college, huh? So you chose the college path as a young man. And what did you chase in college? What was that exactly, that degree that you went after?
I didn't necessarily chase college. I chased a goal to be a professional snowboarder first. I went to 1 year of a community college, Palomar College, out in San Marcos, California. After high school, I graduated high school 87, went to 1 year of junior college, didn't quite know what I wanted to do. Always loved reading, honestly. And ISM was a magazine, International Snowboard Magazine, was the mag at the time. The Bible for snowboarders. And I decided I'm going to go and try and make it as a pro. And I moved to Breckenridge, Colorado. That was inspired by my mom, who died when I was 17 from cancer. And she had told me one of her last, how it is with that, with cancer, eventually you lose your speech and it becomes a freaking nightmare. But imagine a 17-year-old kid listening to his mom on her deathbed. And she just said, they worked a lot. My parents were entrepreneurs. She was a pharmacist. My dad was a CPA. They were retailers. And she just said, if there's anything you want to do in life, do it now, because you never know about tomorrow. I mean, they put off a lot for retirement and whatever. We were always behind the eight ball. And so that inspired me to go out there. And I'm going to try and encapsulate a whole bunch of the circuitous route that took me to this whole thing. Worked at a ski shop, rode 120 days that year, got sponsored, blew my knee out. And somewhere in there, I met a travel writer on a chairlift. When I had my season pass, and he started interviewing me about Breckenridge, like, where's the best happy hours? Where's the best place to grab a bite to eat? Where can I find powder 2 days after the storm? These kind of questions.
And the in-person podcast.
Yeah.
The
on
original.
On a chair.
I know.
And so he did this. And then I turned around and said, you know, I eventually want to go to school, and this was before my injury. And I just said, did you major in anything? What did you do? And he said, I majored in journalism, and I worked for a newspaper. They sent me out here on assignment. I'm at the Beaver Creek Resort, which is a swanky lodge at the bottom of the hill at Peak 9, I think it is, in Breckenridge, and free lift tickets, write a story. And I thought, what a scam. And that's when he said, you know, journalism. And so I blew my knee out a couple of years later after I was sponsored and got through that route. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to knuckle down. I'm going to get my degree in journalism. I still want to be in this world of snowboarding. My goal is to be an editor and writer for ISM, and went back to school and got the degree. ISM went out of business. I was crushed. And Transworld, I found out, was just in Oceanside up the road. And so I ended up finding a place at rental between Oceanside and San Diego State in Encinitas and Cardiff by the sea, actually, and got a place. And I would commute to school for the last classes, and I would commute north to Transworld, and ultimately worked my way up to the ladder. And with FNA, I was able to see the world on someone else's dime, snowboarding with my heroes.
You know, I want to say there's a cover of Terhei just bombing off of a cliff on the cover of the Transworld that was just one of my favorite photos of him just going ham off this cliff, huge cliff.
I got the magazine right there.
Yeah, it's been a few years, right? And forgive me, I should have kept all these things of nostalgia from my skate shop. But I'll tell you this, I did one time get like this card was inside of one of these business dealer magazines that came to my shop, and I was just young 16-year-old Aaron sitting behind the shop one day, and it's like, fill this out and try to win something from Plan B or something like Girl Skateboards. And so I get this skateboard in the mail after filling out that little postcard, right? And yeah. I open it up and it's signed by Thurston Moore of Sonic Youth. And it's got Guy Mariano on it, and he's kicking a soccer ball with his little girl skateboard. And I just want to say that it's because of that magazine and that influenced my life as a skateboard shop owner, as a young man trying to get these brands and trying to find what brand I can purchase to have in my area. It's because of you, bro. Transworld transformed my life.
Wow. I will tell Peggy Cousins and Larry Balma and Louise Balma and Brian Selstrom and all the people, Kevin Kinnear, Grant Britton, Dave Swift, all these names, Skin Phillips. I mean, all these people would love to hear that. And you know what? It's pretty special. We had a reunion, a Transworld reunion from all the magazines that they did not too long ago. And it did. I went in there and it was just kind of like, it was just a feel good vibe of just standing in the middle of this aura of people that all had that similar experience. And some of the people I didn't know, it was like, yeah. And it was kind of like when you're with a group of snowboarders from back in the golden age, it's kind of like what I've tried to tell people to explain. I'm like, I know you, but I don't know you. Or yeah. I don't know you, but I know you. And it's because we all have that common thing. It made the world a little smaller place. And, you know, that hand, that nod, that whatever, you know, it was a good thing.
Well, you put friends of mine in the magazines like Jason Brown, you know, I mean, you know, I skated with him. Yeah. Here in Utah. All the time.
Well, you earlier mentioned a shot of Terrier with a huge cliff. And I don't know if this is it or not.
That is it.
But that was a huge thing. And you can kind of see if you look over this way. I mean, those are all like magazines and up here on my wall. I mean, these are the history books of the sport.
Yes.
And I was able to pull them all out when it was time to circle back and tell the story.
You probably find my skate shop in a 93 or 94 back page. If it's like local skate shops, you know how there was a list, right?
In snowboarding or in skateboarding?
Did snowboarding have that, or did I thought they both had it?
They both did. They both did for sure. I mean, I would guess this in here. Yeah, no,
I'm a baller. I'd be everywhere, bro.
I mean, the earliest one. This was ISM. I told you about. I don't know if you might be too young.
I love to remember that. That's legit.
Yeah, dude. And Bert Lamar, Vision Streetwear back cover. When he, you know, I mean,
Is that a Sims snowboard?
Is he on a Sims? Yeah. When Bert Lamar was on Sims at first, and what did it say? World champs. Like Bert Lamar. And that was during the period when Craig Kelly was in a legal dispute with Sims because he jumped ship from Sims, went to Burton.
And went to Burton. Yeah.
And all that. Yeah. It's all covered in the book. Not that I'm trying to sell a book, but you know.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
Well, let's talk about the Darkest White. You know what? I mean, obviously, the Darkest White to me is exactly what it is. It's like, you know, the snow's all white and then it's all dark. It's just gone. You know, it's just like, to me, it's Avi. It's, you know, you can look up, you know, the things about Craig Kelly and those that perished, you know, but tell me about Craig and what moved you to want to just tell the story of the Michael Jordan of snowboarding at the time of Michael Jordan.
Yeah, no, exactly. I can actually have a prop here that will show and take you to the moment of that catalyst. So this, Craig Kelly is my co-pilot, if you can see that.
Yes.
That was a sticker that was made by a kid in Utah, the X Games, the year when he died in 2003. And it was, you know, Craig was kind of like the compass that pointed the way for a lot of snowboarders in our generation. And I was 15 years after his death in a chairlift line, taking my son snowboarding. And this kid in the lift line next to me, a kid who looks like he should know better. Like, you know, he's in his 20s or whatever, but he's got his gears gnarly, his board's chipped up, he rides a lot. And he looks down at that and just looks over and says, "Who's Craig Kelly?" And I just was floored. Because Craig Kelly was everything to us. And I realized at that point, wow, the new generation doesn't even know who he is. And I didn't want him to be forgotten. And that's what made me decide I want to tell the story. Because I knew Craig personally just through magazine articles. We were friends. We weren't buddies, you know, like the kids he grew up with and whatnot. Or the Mount Baker hardcore that he rode with at Mount Baker.
Right.
But we were close. We spent time together. And anybody who spent time with Craig got to experience he just has this aura, and he was snowboarding's first professional. He was a guy who brought discipline and training. He worked his ass off, with a 4-time world champion. And that's what really, you know, makes him, I think the special ops communities would all appreciate Craig, because he was that guy who he was a child of adversity, and a lot of special ops guys were and are. And so he had divorced parents, latchkey kid. His dad ran a trucking business. There was times when he'd be home alone for weeks at a time. If something was going to happen in his life, he was going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. At the same time, he loved his parents. He had, they loved him, and just he had to grow up a little bit early. And he rose up, and he was smart. He was cerebral. He was going to the University of Washington, majoring in chemical engineering. Just a bright guy, super smart. And then he decided, 2 quarters shy of graduating. He started the university, by the way. He had moved up in school. He was 17 years old his freshman year in college. So he was like the baby in a fraternity. So anyways, he was this guy who decided, hey, I think I can make it as a pro snowboarder in a sport that didn't even exist yet. Dropped out of college where he had this promising career to make a lot of money compared to, you know, the near poverty that he grew up in, and became an icon. And it's just a great story, and he inspired so many people. He was eloquent, he was smart, and he had this ethereal style that just, it made him beautiful to watch. No matter what he was doing, freestyle, half pipe, tricks, but especially
hand plants
and drag. Especially though in powder. And he ultimately left, you know, turned and walked away from all of it and returned to the backcountry because that was kind of where he felt snowboarding was most pure, and where he followed his bliss and decided, I'm going to go back into the backcountry. And he ultimately was endeavoring to become a mountain guide at a time in his life when he was 36 years old, when he had kind of dropped off the map publicly. And the way I describe it, I know I'm sorry, I'm an 80s kid, but he was the Obi-Wan Kenobi of snowboarding. And that was who was this mysterious misto soul surfing snow surfer who, but was always progressing inside and was tragically killed during his training to become the first snowboarding mountain guide for the ACMG, Association of Canadian Mountain Guides, which is renowned around the world. You know, they are gnarly. They are like the top percent, just like
special. You think that he made they actually a path train for yeah. others to follow. You think?
Yeah,
he gave others the wake that they could ride on to.
He broke down the walls with the ACMG. He was the first snowboarder splitboarder that they allowed to even attempt their training certification process. And people to this day, the people who followed after and the first one, they always give credit to Craig. And yeah. So I want the world to know about Craig. I want everybody on the planet to know who Craig was, at least the snowboarders and the skiers. I don't want anybody to see a Craig Kelly is my co-pilot sticker and say, who's Craig Kelly? And that's my goal with this book.
That's awesome. I have actually on my snowboard in my Thule right now, I have a I Ride with Jake sticker. Ah.
Yeah,
on there. And I also do the I Ride for Others hashtag whenever I post up snowboard pics. It's like, you know, I have that mindset as well. I don't want to take it for granted. Yesterday, I was traversing Millie Bowl with my wife, and we take Millie at Brighton, go all the way up, go in front of Millie Bowl, and it was just straight chutes and ladders all the way down. And I slid out for like, I don't know, 5-6 seconds, and I got all this slough at the base of my feet, and I just come to a stop. And I'm just like, oh, man, I'm playing with, I mean, like, I know we avalanche bust up there and the ski patrol's really great at it. But I mean, you know, you just have this awareness all of a sudden. And my wife's above me. She's like, are you going to slide down or are you going to snowboard down? And I was like, I stood up.
Ouch.
I was like, I'm snowboard down.
What are you talking about? You didn't see anything. These are not the droids you're looking for.
No, dude. We're literally traversing, you know, what you look like would be powder, but it's wet and it's heavy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was talking crap to Millie the mountain as I was riding, and then she just stuck me in the snow. And I said, all right. I was like, fair enough, Millie. All right.
Hey, the mountain will put you in your place. Nature 100%. Always wins.
Always. I mean, if you're not ready and you're not alert and you're not aware of what's around you, you know, I'm like, give me 3 second lead time to navigate myself is what I'll say to her if we're right. You know, give me 3 seconds the lead time, and then you come to me like kind of like that. And just make sure I don't go off a cliff.
Yeah. Yeah. Do that. That's awesome. Cool. That's so that is funny.
Yeah. Taught my wife to snowboard now 6 years ago. She learned at 40. She's hard charger. She's faster than me. I thought I was like, oh, I grew up with Jason Brown and went to school with JP and all these different guys, and like, she's gone.
I bet she carves because they learn the mechanics better. They're I don't want to throw out, you know, hips graceful and the mechanics, and all comes together, and it's a different look when you see a woman ride. They can ride anything that a guy can nowadays, and oh my God, if you look at the half pipe and everything, it blows my mind. There is a much more even playing field now than it was when we started. But it's great. It's really honestly, the snowboarding has become like what skiing was. I don't know if you've noticed, but like the kids, a lot of the kids are wanting to ski, so they rebel against their parents who are snowboarders. And Cody Townsend who, you know, the guy did the 50 project, that, you know, writing all the 50 best ski lines in the world. And he's working on that. Amazing skier, nicest guy in the world. And I came to find out that his dad wrote a Craig Kelly air. I sent him a copy of the book back. And he said, you know, I think it was one of the early generations where my parents were both snowboarders and I rebelled and said, I want to ski. And now he's like, you know, one of the most amazing skiers in the world.
Yeah. I can't laugh at that. I started as a skier at Powder Mountain here in Utah. And with my skate shop, I was like, I got to get on the snow. First, I started as a cross-country skier. I wanted to do the biathlon. So my father encouraged that and would train me to do cross-country ski biathlon. He wanted to see me do it. So he's like, let's go do it. And then I liked the downhill part of skiing. And so I started downhill skiing, got some K2s, and I bought my own boots, my own Nordicas. I was like hustling. And then I started riding at Powder Mountain, and I'm sitting on the night ski lift. And as we're going up at Powder Mountain, I look over and there's a bonfire, and I just see these snowboarders wearing Sorels, bro. And he's just like, tap, 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 up the stairs.
Hi. Oh, my God.
He's like, I'll be right there, bro. Kek, 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 up the stairs. And I was like, I want to walk like that. I don't want to wear RoboCop boots.
Yeah. Kong, kong, kong,
dead or alive, kong, you're coming kong, with me. Kong. Here I come. You know what I'm saying, dude? It's like, can't run. So from then on, I rode a Burton split tail board that I had in my skate shop that was I was trying to sell, but nobody wanted it because it was too old school.
Yeah, and the new it was probably a Burton Elite, black and red, maybe.
It was yellow, and
oh, the yellow with like the pinky weird swirly whatever. It was still an Elite
tail.
Yep, I remember. I know exactly the board. Yeah,
and having a skate shop allowed me access to people like getting rid of stuff that they didn't know they wanted. You know, back in the day. And I remember I had like this Burton twin tip demo board. It said demo in the bottom of the P-Tech stuff. I was like, well, I'll sell that.
Well, I'm just, 13 years old to be the entrepreneur and want to open a shop and stoke, you know, you probably, I don't know, there probably weren't a lot of skaters or maybe there were a lot of skaters, but there wasn't a shop. But whatever it was, dude, 13 year old entrepreneur, you need to meet Ken Achenbach and have him on your show someday. Because he opened the first snowboard shop in Calgary out of his parents' garage.
That's basically, we could talk. You know, I started selling grilled cheese sandwiches because kids were selling lemonade. And I would sell them for $2. And then my dad had a vending machine in his armory because he was an army guy. And he's like, well, I'm going to feed all my guys when they come to drill. So I'll have a Coke machine and a vending machine. And so we had some stuff in the garage and I would bring it outside and sell it. And I'd sell it right there on the corner and the kids would come and buy it from me. My dad's like, how much money did you make today? I was like, $36. He's like, how much bread you use? And I was like, the whole loaf. He's like, how much Velveeta? How much Velveeta? I was like, I don't know, maybe like half the brick of Velveeta. And he's like, well, that costs $4. Okay. And I was like, all right. And he started busting out how much electricity cost and how much the house that I lived in that housed the food cost. And then he started telling me about, you know, how much I made. And he's like, what'd you sell the Diet Cokes for? I said two for a dollar. Everything was 50 cents in the vending machine. It changed to 60 cents and I didn't realize it. And at the time, it was breaking everyone's dollars.
Can you imagine?
You know what I mean?
You can't buy anything out of a vending machine for less than $2 now.
No, so I had to pay him back for the Diet Cokes and the Velveeta, but he said I made enough off the bread that he let me keep it. And that's how I actually got my cross-country ski poles.
Mm-hmm.
It was by hustling for money and he wanted to see me earn it. And that's how I got my Nordica ski boots was hustling. And then I said, hey, Dad, right here, there's a this distributor, Smoot Hill Distribution. It's called Smoot Hill out of L.A. or California. I was like, let me fill this out and get me a business license. And he looked at me and he's like, all right. So I took my $100 that I had saved up in my little cash register, gave it to him. He got me a business license. And then I applied to Smoot Hill and I started getting in skateboards. But I couldn't afford a roll of tape. It was like 80-something bucks.
Wow.
And I could afford like two skateboard decks. So I just started flipping skateboards and then they'd go to the other skate shop that's in Ogden. And he's like, where are you getting all these skateboards? Cause he's grip taping them. He's not selling them the board, just the grip tape. Cause I couldn't afford grip tape.
Didn't have it. Oh my God.
Yeah. But all my homies in the area were like, I'm buying Ray Ray Boys skateboards from his garage. And so next thing you know, my dad's like, we need to get you a little shop. And so we hustled it. And it's not my show. It's about you.
What a great story. No, but I mean, listen, I think that's kind of, I love story. I love people's stories. And that's, and
so you talked about going from like transitioning from snowboarding to military. My dad was fully supportive of that same culture. He was a Green Beret. he saw the whole awesome snowboarding, skiing, downhill, Nordic crossover. You know, he trained me in it.
Right. Yeah, it's not, I mean, a lot of people, they don't get it. They're like, where, how did this happen? And for me, you know, yes. First of all, I always understood the wisdom of older people. And I would always listen to stories, and I was always interested in military history. And what really did the turn for me is, I mean, after I graduated, after I worked for Transworld for many years, and you know, saw the world, went freelance, and started. I wrote my first book called The Last Season, which was more kind of like it's the story of a backcountry ranger who went missing while on patrol. Wow. He was a guy who everybody went to when someone went missing, and then one day he went missing. And they had to find him. It's an awesome story.
And what's the name of that book again?
The Last Season. Takes place in Sequoia Kings Canyon National Park. And it kind of tells the story, backstory of the history of national parks and seasonal park rangers. They called them 3-month wonders or things because they would work just that season area time of year. But anyways, so there's that book. And then 9/11 happened. And around that same period of time, I always, again, loved military history. I had a neighbor who was a Vietnam vet when I was a kid. I was a latchkey kid, so I would go and toss the football around with him. He would show me his old photo albums. He showed me this shot, I remember one time, of a helmet that I didn't have one. I got all sorts of crap here because I like to live it. But I mean, I have a old school Vietnam era helmet.
Oh, I love it.
And he had a picture of his that had a huge dent on the side where he had been sideswiped by friendly fire, by a missile. And that's what him out of the war. But he had been a tunnel rat who was the guy that went in with the pistol. And you tell me all these stories. And I was just rapt by it. And so my mom and dad, they subscribed to Time Life books. And I read the whole history of the Vietnam War, Tet Offensive and, the Demilitarized Zone and the, Cambodia and the Ho Chi Minh Trail. I mean, I learned all this stuff at a very young age and was fascinated by it. And read the Battle of Midway. So I had that base of respecting the military, loving the history, loving the stories. And then Saving Private Ryan came out and mm-hmm. Band of Brothers mm-hmm. and the kind of the storyline that was going with those movies and those shows and things with the World War II vets at that point were getting old. And right. A lot of them didn't talk about it. And a lot of their stories were dying with them. And so fast forward to after 9/11, I just, looked at what was going on. I'd been telling these adventure stories and snowboarding, having a good time, enjoying this life we have in America, right? And right. I thought, the war on terror happened. I got married 3 days after 9/11. It was like a celebration. It was kind of like the ultimate F you to terrorism. No, life goes on. We've got this wedding planned. We're going to party. Yeah. And I just thought, this is history happening right now. And this is our current greatest generation. And a lot of people, these guys are coming back, and women, and they're not talking about it either. It's war. It's shitty. And
yeah.
And so I just
do things.
Yeah. And so I just thought, what can I do? What's my part in this? I didn't serve the military at that point. I mean, when I would have wanted to, I was so far from wanting to do that, but I always had a great respect for it. I always say thank you for your service when I see somebody. And I know some people have a problem with that, whatever, but I'm sorry. When I see old guys with their caps on and their, ship they were
battleship.
On or whatever,
yeah.
I walk up and my kids see me walk up. And one of the proudest moments not too long ago, like, my 16-year-old daughter, when she was probably 13 at an airport, walked up on her own to this old gentleman in a sitting down with a hat and thanked him for his service. And I thought, what a moment.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
The fact that you said we live in America and you get to do all this is like what the thank you I think that service members are cool with, bro. The fact that you said we live in America, we get to do this.
Yeah.
We live here. It's that's
hey,
the thing.
And also, I mean, to look at this whole community, I'm sorry, but I've traveled around the world. I've snowboarded in Iran. I've been to Russia, and snowboarding and skiing and skateboarding, all these companies started in like America. They, and those guys, I've talked to them, and I have a great skier, addicted, most diehard skier ever, that lived in the projects outside of Moscow, and he would always just say, we didn't have companies.
That's because their leaders are free.
Couldn't make,
but they're not
to make
free.
This happen. Anyways,
and we can say that's how it is. They get to say what they want. Yeah.
Oh, he always would tell me their subways and their infrastructure is beautiful. Marble statues, amazing.
Wow.
I took the Trans-Siberian Railway from China through Manchuria all the way across Siberia to Moscow with my girlfriend at the time, wife now, and got to experience some of that. And a lot of kids haven't been able to do that.
No, you're not. I don't. I still see you. You seem to be moving for me, so I see you
again.
Fine.
I don't know if that's an issue. Oh, you? Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyways, going back to why I decided to write these stories, that was really it. I really decided to write these stories, these military stories, because I figured that's my part in all this. I can tell the stories. I can do it, being a fairly moderate, not that a moderate exists anymore. You're either a fascist.
You're far right or far left. There's no like,
but,
you can't be just like, no,
yeah,
but we can.
There's no in between. But
yes.
But I always thought of myself, as being pretty moderate, but I also thought of myself as someone who I just want to tell the story from the perspective of the guys and women on the ground. And that's what I wanted to do. That's what I endeavored to do. And I thought this is how I can honor and be, do something for my place. So I stepped away from all that fun and action stuff, whatever, and thought I'm going to find a story to tell that will document our current generation of warriors. And it started with The Only Thing Worth Dying For. I went and sat in on a class of, at the time he was a major, but after 9/11, he was the captain of an ODA, 574, Jason Amerine, found out that he had been the military advisor for Hamid Karzai.
The president.
And,
of Afghanistan.
Who became the president.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the most, I look back and I'm all, wait, this is the most geopolitically significant SF mission probably of all time, because that is what they do, right? They go in, they foment a rebellion among a group, overthrow whatever, the bad guys, which I agree were the bad guys. The Taliban were bad guys for sure.
Yes.
And within the Pashtun, they went into the south. Everybody else, the original horse soldiers, went in with the Northern Alliance. And they went in with standing armies of, people who were warriors. They had been fighting the Mujahideen early on against Russia and everything. He went in with this unknown statesman. And basically, once they found out this small under-strength ODA, there was only 11 instead of 12, they went in and there was a...
You're talking about the horsemen, right? That's who you're talking about.
No, I'm talking... This is the group I wrote about within the South.
Oh.
They're all considered the horsemen, that era, because they went in. But these guys didn't ride horses. They were in the South and they rode trucks.
I was going to say, because I interviewed the commander of the horsemen, who was the guy that taught them how to ride the horses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, there's totally. Anyways, that was my first deal. I went in, I met this guy. He was teaching at West Point. He was teaching Arabic at West Point. And he kind of liked the fact that I was not a New York Times or a Wall Street Journal, like political writer. I had no spin. I had no angle. I had nothing going political. I just said, I want to tell the story. And he had read my book The Last Season. And he thought it was cool that I was a snowboarder and worked for a snowboarding magazine. And he said, if you go and talk to the family members of the guys on my team who did not survive, and they're into letting you tell the story, he said, I'll tell you everything I can, you know, aside from TTPs and whatever. And he had kept scrupulous notes of his conversation with Karzai and everything. And I did. Daniel H. Pettitore. And Daniel H. Pettitore was in Cheshire, Massachusetts. And Donnie Davis, J.D., was from, oh my gosh, Tennessee. And I went to their, and I talked to their families, and this, they said, I would love it if you tell their story.
That's awesome.
And when I left, it was really cool. I mean, for me, I never pull punches. I mean, I tell the story like it happened. And at first it was tough. I'm like, I'm going to learn things about these guys. This was battle. And there was a friendly fire incident that happened.
Which is not really friendly, right? The joke about friendly fire is it's not really friendly when you're getting shot.
Yeah.
That person shot? How's that friendly?
Sorry, yeah, bro. It's blue on blue, but this was a friendly fire incident. This is friendly fire in the fact that, if you can imagine, a staff element came in and decided they wanted to call some JDAM bombs in, and they called a 2,000-pound JDAM in on their own position.
Yeah.
And so it was horrible. It was a mass casualty situation. But Daniel H. Pettitore was the radio man. And so the parents were always kind of wondering, like, was he the guy that called it in? They were kind of curious. And I went and stayed with them. I went to Cheshire, like the classic New England town where in the Berkshires, where the tallest building is the church steeple. I mean, classic town, white buildings. Visited his grave, slept in his bedroom as a boy, that he slept in as a boy. They showed me, you know, where he would be up in the window and snipe at his buddies with a BB gun. All these great stories. And after I left, his dad, well, the first night we got there, they were really nervous. And we started with a few beers and then went to the whiskey bottle. And then we opened up. We talked until like 3 a.m. And then the next day we talked. I hung out for a few days. And then when I was leaving, he said, Eric, I know you're going to do a great job. Just do me one favor. And he's telling me this while he's shaking my hand. One of those long, maybe a little bit uncomfortable, overly long handshakes,
yeah.
pulled in tight. And he just says, tell it like it happened. He said, Dan believed in accountability. And I don't know exactly what happened. I'm hoping that you'll find out, but I want to know. And we just want it. He said, don't candy coat everything. You know, don't make him an A student if he was really a C+ student. You know, sure. I mean, tell it like it happened. And that was such an amazing thing for me as a young writer, is kind of have that permission to say, hey, these people just want to know what happened. They don't necessarily want, they don't want this, you know, propaganda. They don't want something that's going to just kind of necessarily elevate their son. They want to be respectful, of course, but they want to know the truth. And that set the stage for every one of my books thereafter. And that's what I've been able to do. I've always just thought, you know what, at the end of the day, I can always stand on the truth. And I know where every line comes in my books. I know if someone asks me, why'd you put this there? I will tell them. If there's a hole in my book, sorry, because I've always told people when I get to talk to students occasionally now, I'll tell them in nonfiction, you know, you're going to find places where you cannot fill a certain aspect of the story, and don't make it up. It's better to have a little hole in your story than to fill it with bullshit. And I don't know. It's just been an honor to tell these stories, and each one has led to the next. I mean, Adam Brown, you know, came after that, and then I told the story of Roy Benavidez, the Medal of Honor recipient.
Green Beret,
you don't
right?
win. You don't win a Medal of Honor, of course, being a civilian. Yeah, I learned that right off the bat.
You're awarded it.
You're a recipient.
Yeah, it's an award.
So many people said if he won the Medal of Honor, and they will look at you and say, I didn't win.
They don't really want it.
They don't want that, no. And so anyways, I just was able to get into this community that appreciated it. And I thought what I can do, that maybe somebody who's writing a memoir that is in deep in these worlds, maybe they can't make it quite as accessible to the general public. And honestly, the general public needs to read these stories. And so I feel like I can help. I was able to help bridge that gap, be respectful, and you know, inspire people with the things people have overcome.
The things that people will read that you write, like your business magazine,
hopefully,
or like your fearless books,
exactly,
or like this Craig Kelly, The Darkest White, right?
Because it's real.
It's real.
It's real. It's real stuff. And it is, you know, the one, I think the nicest compliment I ever got from a special ops guy, actually a Green Beret, where he said, dude, I read this book and you're a civilian and you weren't there. And as I read this story, I felt like I was there beside those guys. And he said, that is a credit to you. And thank you. He said, the terminology was great. And you explained what my mom or dad, this guy had, you know, parents said, I want my parents to read this because they can help explain to them what I do in a way that I can't.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it takes an outside perspective to bring it to the table, right? You don't have, you know, the guys are so in that world all the time and they're so jaded to all of the acronyms and everything that goes on. And they just say these things to each other like MOS or, you know, whatever the acronym is. And civilians are like, what is that? You know, it's a whole other world.
Oh,
and so to have you come into that world and be able to decipher these code words and bring it to a story and then deliver it in a way that is based off of the reality of what these guys went through. That's awesome.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
I was crazy acronym challenged. I mean, these guys would start talking. I would have to say, whoa. You just said three things and I have no idea what you just said.
Yeah, what's a fart?
Slow down.
What's a forward error refueling? Wait, what's a fob and a fac and a defac? Is that where we eat?
Yeah.
Wait, and
It was cool too. Like as I got into it, I mean, early on, I was embedded with a platoon of Army Rangers to do a magazine article once upon a time. I got to do it in 1999,
what?
Before like 9/11, and it kicked my ass. At the end of this 36 hours, I was literally pissing blood. I mean, the guy out in the field gave me an IV to rehydrate me.
You got a ranger drip?
I thought I was in shape. I thought that I was in shape, but I was in civilian shape. Yeah. I wasn't in Korean War era
a shape
rock.
Round is a shape.
It was crazy. But the what was kind of cool about following that, I love the Ranger history and, you know, Pointe du Hoc. And I've gone to Normandy, went there to check that out and see those cliffs. And it was cool. Like when 9/11 happened early on, some of the original, like, you know, grainy footage of a ground operation was an airfield was being seen. They showed the parachutes coming down, all this, and it was on the news, and it didn't say who it was or whatever. They said American forces are coming in. And I remember leaning over to my girlfriend saying, those are Rangers. Mm-hmm. They specialize in airfield seizures. And like 2 days later, they said, we've come to find out that the group that whatever was Army Rangers. And like I was like a hero to my buddy. They're all, how did you know that? I'm like, because that's what they do.
That's what they do.
And you know, I don't know. It's just, it's fascinating to me. And it's a way of showing, you know a little bit of it, of our, the different units' history, you know, everything from De Oppresso Liber to whatever.
Yes.
It's just, you know, it's nice to know your country's history and the people that give us this world. I'll circle back to it again. I love it. And and Craig, by telling Craig's story, he really lived that as well. And he was a guy who had friends who from all walks of life. He had a guy, one of his closest mentors had escaped Czechoslovakia and was huge on personal freedoms. And so he had friends on that were very on the red side of the spectrum and the blue side both. And he was this guy that just could always see the good in both sides. He was somebody that would have flourished and not lost friends during the COVID fiasco when people are being so divided. He really could bridge the gap.
Yeah.
And that's another special thing about Craig Kelly. So he, I don't know, it was just time to tell his story.
Yeah,
and
that's awesome. We need more people like that, that can just bridge the gap and just be like, hey, look, you know, just stop labeling people.
Yeah, no, he could do that. And I think, you know, people respected him. First of all, he was really smart and he could look at everything. But he would, his widow, Savina, would say how he had this, I'm paraphrasing her, this amazing ability to look at a person and kind of see the good in them or the whatever, you know, and focus on that and not necessarily define them by something that you might perceive as not so good.
Right.
And that's not how she said it. She said it much more eloquently, but she noticed that in Craig as well. And we need more people like that. We need more people like
he
Craig.
Just had, he had the ability to just see them, like see something.
In yeah. Well, he was an ambassador.
Yeah.
I mean, he was an ambassador of snowboarding when you know, skiers hated snowboarders or, you know, so everybody thought.
Alta,
and we all, you know, it was fun. I mean, come on, it was fun.
Yeah,
it was
I get it. Mess I know. I know. That. I was both sides of the
coin. I mean, that's what you want to do. Yeah, totally. I love, honestly, at this point, what I love is that whoever is out in the mountains, in nature,
exactly,
enjoying outside with the kids, with their wife, with their friends, whatever, just get out there and to do something that's fun.
Go for a hike.
And be in nature for a hike. Yeah.
Go or swimming.
Even better. Like nowadays, I don't care. I'll splitboard, throw my splitboard on.
Yep.
Go hike for 2 hours and get one run. And I'm like, my heart is full for a week.
Yeah. You earn those turns though when you splitboard. You know, for those of you that may not know what splitboarding is, it's where you take a snowboard and you saw it down the middle and you put the bindings forward and then you put these skins on the bottom of them that strap on. And then they slap on the bottom and then you start to cross country ski uphill because you got some grip. And then you get to the top.
Yeah.
And then you take your skis that were split and you put them together and they got latches and then they latch together. And now you can turn your bindings sideways and you can go down the mountain like the rest of us sideways riders.
Yeah, you're
just to break that
you
down.
Go up as a cross country, that Nordic mentality of going up and walking up the mountain.
Yeah.
And going out without sinking down to your, you know, knees or whatever and post-holing makes it much less tedious and more energy to go down. And so you're basically a cross-country skier on the way up and a snow surfer on the way down. And almost, you know, so many companies now, there were kits originally that you could do exactly what you said, slide down the middle. Now with Jones Snowboards, Burton, Winterstick, everybody, all of these, they have.
I think there's a nitro split board too.
The very first with a nitro split. And honestly, my favorite article in Transworld was when I don't know if you remember at the Chameleon, where I poached all the skiers that didn't allow snowboarding on a split board.
Yeah.
I went and bought a lift ticket.
You at did Alta, that?
At Keystone. That was me. Well, with my alter ego.
Yeah, no, right. You're I'm gonna go ride these places with your splits.
I'm gonna it was when the first split came out. I still have never skied in my life. I've been snowboarding since 83-ish. But that board came out and I thought, you know, they're hard boots. They look like skis. I'm going to go buy a lift ticket at all these few dinosaur resorts that don't allow snowboarding. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get on the lift. I'm going to go to the top of this busiest run. I'm going to pop into the trees. I'm going to turn it back into a snowboard. And I'm going to ride down the center. And I'm going to ride as many runs as I can until the
ski patrol
tackles me and kicks me off. And I did it at Three Mountains the first year.
Rocket skis. Oh, you're like, rocket skis. Yeah. I got them.
It was great. I got to be a spy. I basically created the Altergeist. It said that we hired a spy named the Chameleon.
Yeah.
Because you blended. Yeah. And that's how I did it. And then I did Park City the next year. I called it Irony in the Wasatch because at that point, they did not allow snowboarding, but they were bidding for the Olympic snowboarding event.
You know, and they said that we weren't going to get it unless, you know, one of the ski resorts here, I don't even want to give them credit for who they are. They're a town in Utah. I don't want to call them their name because they won't allow snowboarding. You can hike it, but they won't allow you to go up there, you know? And I just find that to be unfair. And back in the day, Jake Burton was like, the Olympics should be boycotted until, you know, snowboarding is allowed at that specific resort.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay? No, I know. I know exactly what you're talking about. And Taos, New Mexico. I rode Taos before anybody else. There was a little free Taos movement.
Snow Basin didn't allow snowboarding. My wife asked me, and I can't come up with an answer of why I never snowboarded at Basin. And I grew up, I went to Powder Mountain in Nordic Valley, my backyard's up there and in the northern Utah area. And I was like, oh, they didn't allow snowboarding. I was like, that's what it was.
Yeah, no.
For a while, I think about it.
Yeah, no. And I mean, in the very beginning, I get it. Like when the equipment was as horrible as it was, and literally it was questionable if kids could turn left, right, and stop on a dime and not hit somebody. But that was in the very beginning. It didn't, once high back bindings came into play and steel edges, there was no difference between the out of control danger zone of a beginning skier and a beginning snowboarder.
Pizza.
You know, so there's all these things that were, you know, at play. But and then there's Mad River Glen on the East Coast. You know, they have that little bumper sticker that says Mad River Glen, ski it if you can. I know a guy, his name was Greg Saladino, and he is kind of an inventor, just a genius guy. And he made his own play on that and made sticker that said Mad River Glen, I'd ride it if I could.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, that's exactly it. That's so great, dude.
Yeah.
I love it. And I love snowboarding. And I know I've had you for almost an hour of your time. And we've talked about, you know, the Darkest White, which is the Craig Kelly story. And he's a extreme athlete, a U.S. snowboard champion. And I mean that he won the U.S. championships here, right? And so
he was a four-time, you know, world champion.
Yes.
And seven times in various disciplines back in the 80s and 90s. Basically, Craig Kelly was the Shaun White of the 80s and 90s. Everybody out there knows who Shaun White is, right? Or Chloe Kim.
Yes.
You know, who these riders are now, who are these Olympians that are on the tip of everyone's tongue.
Mark McMorris.
At that point, yeah, exactly. I liken it to anybody out there who...
Travis Rice. I got to say that for him. I got to say Travis Rice.
How can I not talk about
the Navy SEAL of snowboarding without bringing up Travis Rice? I mean, the guy literally has a TV of the terrain, what is underneath it, and the lines that should be not ran, and all of the things that you do for like a combat mission. He is pre-planning a year in advance to drop what he drops.
Yeah.
That dude.
No, he is another very cerebral rider who has a gift for terrain and riding it. And
I ride
like
a
no T-Rex
Pro,
I mean,
157 wide, and I'm 6'5". Okay. I should ride a,
wow. You're 6'5". Yeah. Are you kidding me?
And I ride a 157, but I like it.
You ride a 157 and you're 6'5".
Yeah, I ride a 157 wide.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it's just T-Rex.
I'm 5'9½ on a good day.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time being old school going below a 162.
I told my wife.
I
should probably ride like
a 158 is good.
I used to carry Avalanche snowboards. They were this brand. And
I know Avalanche.
And there was like a 173 backcountry. It was super tall. I was like, how am I ever going to sell that?
That thing was huge. You know, I have some of those old boards as well. And I don't need them that long. And honestly, it is true. Nowadays, the shorter boards with the effective running edge and the length and everything, you know, especially a camber board, you don't necessarily need the length. Like a 158 is kind of should be my board, I think.
I just like to have the ability
to maneuver. For this book tour, this whole book tour to honor Craig, I'm leaving literally, I don't know when you're going to be able to put this up, but I'm, you know, my book tour is starting on the 26th is the first day. of the book tour in Boulder, Colorado, and then I get to go to Edwards and Rodding Vale and
are you coming
Bozeman,
to Utah?
Big Sky. I will come to Utah eventually. In fact, I'm going to be on, can I say another podcast name?
Sure.
The Bomb Hole. Those guys are awesome.
As long as they say my podcast, Soft Rep, I'm cool
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you should be on the Bomb Hole.
Oh, bro.
And I'm not kidding. Oh. No, you should be on the Bomb Hole. Your history and everything and your whole vibe,
Brother.
Are snowboarding. You are the epitome of snowboarding right there. And I can't believe you're in Utah.
I am in Utah.
And that you're not on that. That you're not on – not that – I can't believe that you're not in Utah. I can't believe that you're in Utah and haven't been on the Bomb Hole yet.
No, no.
Because you should.
I've hosted events at Brighton, been the MC for those things. Like, we had the Wizards Festival for Slug Magazine out here and all that stuff. And,
yeah,
you know, the Bomb Hole is awesome. They bring their limo out and everybody loves to ride for them. And, like, you know, Baby Kangaroo or Joey Fava, he's out here. Pat just won the X Games freestyle.
Yeah. I'm going to do a call-in for the book at some point here next week for them, like a Tony McCollum. And at some point, I want to get out there and do an event. Oh, I have to get back out to Utah.
We have to A-priest together one day, bro.
Oh, for sure. Are you kidding me? A-pri or afternoon and then A-pri.
Exactly. Well, we can go to the new Snake Creek Lodge that just opened called Sidewinder at Brighton and have the Doyles come over and just have something to eat, some chicken strips, dude, tater tots.
That's perfect.
Go shred Thor.
It's going to be a really fun event. I honestly, right now, my biggest decision, it's pretty funny, but I'm going on this book tour. And the best thing you can do to honor Craig Kelly, first of all, it would be amazing if it hit a bestseller list. You know,
yes.
That would be awesome for Craig because he was such a competitive guy once upon a time. And I'm competitive myself. So I hope everybody out there might consider picking up a copy. But in addition to that, best way I could honor Craig is to go on a book tour and snowboard everywhere I go.
Everywhere.
And so right now, my biggest question is I'm putting together my little quiver, and I like to have one. I ride, like, you know, one board generally, but my quiver is that I'm going to bring that board that mm-hmm. started this whole process that I showed you.
Yes.
It's a Burton Juice Wagon from 2013. I love it. It's got a narrow tail, a little wider in the shovel for POW. Love it. It's a great board. For carving, I'm riding Jones Stratos.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Love Jones
and,
boards.
And then I have my 158 Rob Kingwell winter stick.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Arc. And so those are my three boards that I'm going to bring on this trip. And it's funny because I packed them like a week ago.
You're ready.
And now I'm ready.
You're like, are you kidding me? I'm out the door yesterday. Friends sleeping over. They're like up at 5:30 in the morning, all dressed in their bed, ready to go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I was. My friends actually called me Fireball when I was a kid. I was a kid knocking on windows at 5 a.m. to Dawn Patrol surf with them.
Yeah, let's go.
Like, dude, it's 5 a.m. We want to get there early.
And you already have like a cup of like hot chocolate or coffee going. You're like, what are you doing? Let's go.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's. I mean, you're burning daylight. You can sleep when you're dead.
Exactly. 100%. And you know what? I think that is the best way to go out on the show is that if you're burned out, you'll sleep when you're dead. So don't give up until then. And then second, you go check out The Darkest White, the book written by Eric Blem and the life story of Craig Kelly and, you know, how he was a hard charger. He's got multiple.
And the avalanche that killed him. It's a survival story, like the perfect storm only in the mountains.
Yeah.
That part will rock your world. It's a cautionary tale, but it's an inspiring story.
Like I was saying,
I think that this community would love it. And I'm just stoked that you can let some people know about it. I appreciate it very much.
We will. We shall. And it's going to have a little link on there, too, that my guys will dissertate down there when they type it out and listen to it and listen to what we talk about. And Anton and Mark and Brandon and all you guys that listen to these podcasts after I record them, I want to thank you for all your effort that you put into making these shows the number one rated podcast. You tell me it is. You tell me it's number one, guys, on behind the scenes. So I'll keep it going. And with that, I just want to say, check out our book club, softrep.com/book club. Right now, we're running promos on softrep.com, so make sure you're going over there and visiting us, and make sure you're checking out, you know, Eric Blem's books and his life stories that he's putting out there for us, and if you can find an old copy of Transworld Snowboarding, go look it up. I think there's probably digital formats of it out there online that you could probably find and just see what...
It's everything. It's an audio. It's electronic. Everything nowadays. Are you kidding me? It's in every single format you can find. Readers of Fearless will love it. And I just want to do one final shout out. You're going to get the last word, but I just want to say, you know, thank you all the listeners. You know, a lot of you have worn the uniform. I never did, but I appreciate you all for what you've done and your family's sacrifices for the rest of us so we can live this freaking awesome life that we get to live here in
That's right.
awesome nation of America. Thank
okay,
you.
So my last word is to my veterans who have served, who can go to the VA to ask their doctor for recreational therapy. Okay. Go to them and say, hey, can you please prescribe me something other than pills? So let's get thrills before pills. Okay. So if you can go outside, get a prescription for a snowboard, get a prescription for some snowshoes, get a prescription for some rollerblades, go do that. A skateboard, whatever it is, you know, go outside, enjoy yourself. Ask your VA representative for recreational therapy. You think I'm joking, but those dudes that lose their legs, that ride in buckets down the mountain, are getting recreational therapy. It's a thing. Okay. So get out there, enjoy yourself, touch some water, and just live life to the best. Okay. And Eric, on behalf of everybody here, Brandon Webb, who's a hard charging skier, he probably will be thrilled to know that I had this conversation with you. Thank you so much for being on our show, Soft Rep Radio, and I will say peace.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.